WERU is made possible by the generous support of our listeners.
The time's 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online everywhere at WERU.org. Maine Arts Alive with your host Michael Donahue is up next.
Welcome to Maine Arts Alive. Thank you for tuning in this morning because we have what I think is a particularly fascinating program this morning. Maine Arts Alive is WERU's salute to the arts community, this fascinating group of people and organizations that live and work throughout this entire state and make Maine what it is. Today we are focusing on something that I will guarantee you will know something about, Haystack Mountain School of Crafts. It's an organization that, as it says, is fostering artistic exploration. I want to dig into that. I want to find out what that means. And we have two guests here today. One is the executive director of Haystack, Stuart Kestenbaum. Welcome, Stuart.
Hi, Michael.
And the other is Elizabeth Bush, who is an artist and an instructor with the Haystack organization and has had, at one point in her life, an epiphany that resulted from her work at Haystack. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
All right. Let's give the audience, let me mention before we start that this is a call-in program, and the second half of the program, we will give you some phone numbers and hope that you call in, because these folks want to hear what you have to say, and our audience would be most interested in your opinions and ideas and these folks' response. Stuart, could you give us just a little background, frame the organization? What is Haystack and where has it come from?
Haystack began in 1951 as a research and studio program in the arts, and it was originally in the town of Montville near Liberty, where Route 3 is, and it was there for 10 years. And when the state decided to straighten out Route 3, it went right through the school property, so we moved to Deer Isle, where it's been since 1961. But ever since its inception, its purpose has always been the same, and it's a place where people can learn about creative process, work with materials, and work in an uninterrupted way. And that's really at the heart of the school. So you're away from distractions, and you can get to maybe a deeper place in terms of your own work, the way you're looking at your work.
You yourself have been with the organization for quite some time. That is not often the case with executive directors. Some come and go. Obviously, something has kept you there. What is it about Haystack that makes you want to spend that much time as executive director?
It's the view. It's everything about the place. I think it's the scale of it, that it's a human scale. We only have a community in a session of about 85 people. It's the vitality that people bring to it every time they come. So that's with every session that we have, which are 2 weeks long during the summer, the place reinvents itself, kind of reimagines itself. So there's nothing that's set about it other than it's not set. And because of that, it makes it a tremendously vital place, and it brings out the best in human imagination. So it as it reinvents itself and reimagines itself, that happens to me as well. So that's what makes it always like it's a new job.
What a wonderful answer. I love that answer.
Well, it's not like that every day, maybe.
You mean there's some days that are frustrating? Elizabeth, let's talk a little bit about your, you are an artist, and could you tell us a little bit about what your work is like?
Yes, I'd like to talk a little bit about my background first.
Sure.
I have a degree in painting from the Rhode Island School of Design. And, of course, with that, I've spent 18 years being an architectural designer. No connection with my background, except that it was a solid background. And I love space, and I was curious about that. And at some point, I wanted to simply do my artwork, and that seemed an impossibility financially. But there was this program that came about called Open Door, and this place called Haystack, which I thought was for really famous people, and I was not one of them. And I went to that Open Door, and it changed my life. It totally changed my life. I felt once again connected with other artists and with a place that was a work of art in itself. It just, in the space, the place of Haystack, encourages creativity. I don't know what it is. It, people call it the Haystack experience, or it's a magical place. And it is. It has a kind of energy in the space, in the landscape, in the ocean, and in all that participate in the programs that make it so. And my epiphany was, I want more of this, and I'm going to find a way to do that. And eventually I did. And since 1987, I've been supporting myself as an artist.
Which is remarkable in and of itself. Now, you said, part of what you said is that the impression you had was this was a place for established, very top-notch artists. That is not true?
No, not at all. I taught a workshop this summer in painting and quilting, which is what I teach, and there were people in the class who had never made a quilt. There were people who had never painted. There were people that had never used a sewing machine. And they were willing to try and experiment because of what they had heard about Haystack. And it was absolutely true. And I learn as much from those people as I do from being there. In fact, I have a whole new series of work now that's based on a little sketch that I did while I was at Haystack this summer. So the epiphany happens over and over and over.
Stuart, for the instructors that you hire, many of which are known throughout the country.
Right.
How do they work with, I'll use the word students, pardon me, but how do they work with the folks there that have all levels of accomplishment? Is that difficult for instructors?
It depends on what the workshop is. So with some workshops, we may have a particular level that you need to have a certain skill level for the type of workshop that's offered. So if it's a jewelry class, you might need to know how to file and solder. But other classes, as Elizabeth said, could be open to all levels. And sometimes you'll get somebody who's been a teacher in another discipline decide to be to take a workshop. You can have an architect in the class, a lawyer, an MFA student, a BFA student, an 18-year-old. Last year, our youngest student was 18. That's how old you have to be for the summer workshops. And our oldest student was 89, and everywhere in between. So as I think for a teacher, it makes it an interesting a challenge and opportunity, because there's not a set curriculum that we have, and there's not a hierarchy within the class. So whether you're at the top of your field or you're just learning, it's a kind of very democratic environment in each of the studios. And in that way, everybody's open to experience. And so it's not without the hierarchy, things really change. People help one another in the class. As Elizabeth said, a teacher can learn from the students. The students can learn from the teachers. And the other thing that happens where it's different from a more conventional educational setting is that the studios are open 24 hours a day. So you can work within 2 weeks. It's the equivalent of what would be a semester in college. And you can stay with an idea for longer than you would if you were, in a class. You might be there for an hour or two. Here, that's about how much time you sleep.
Yeah, I have a good friend who attended one of your classes, and she said that she would take the class and go off and have dinner, and then after dinner run back because she wanted to keep working. And many others would do this. Sometimes she'd go there at 2 o'clock in the morning and there was somebody working.
Right, there's always somebody with a good idea.
Yeah, which is this interdisciplinary idea, this exchange of ideas is, I take it, really what Haystack is all about.
I think so. And then when you're working and you see somebody else working, it just energizes you so yeah. that you, people have more energy than I can imagine over that length of time.
There's a fascinating sentence in your mission statement that I'm not sure what it means. And I'm curious that the investigation, your mission has been refined to include the investigation of craft in an aesthetic climate that honors tradition while acknowledging the potential of contemporary visual art. I'm not sure what that means.
I might be. I'll try.
Okay.
Well, I think that Haystack's tradition, or what it grows out of, is this idea of working with your hands in creative process. Traditional crafts, say like ceramics, where you would learn how to make a pot. But then within that, there's in contemporary visual art, there are lots of ways that people can use materials and work with materials. So we're grounded in the idea that there are time-honored techniques and there are traditions that have gotten us to this place, but that the materials themselves and how we work with them can be open to many different ways of working. So, for example, in contemporary visual art, Anne Hamilton, who just had an installation at the Armory in New York, came from a weaving background. She studied weaving and then began to use the same textile techniques, and now she does armory size installations. But it's growing out of this idea that people can make investigations with materials and craft materials.
Elizabeth, I have a feeling this appeals to you.
Yes, indeed. The heading, excuse me, for my studio is quilts. And as soon as I say quilts, very often people think about something that you put on the bed and that their grandmothers made and tradition. And there are a lot of people in my classes that come from that tradition but want to have a voice of their own and use the processes a little differently and so are willing to take the leap to try what it is. And believe me, a lot of them are scared when they start, you know, oh, I've never painted, what are we going to do? I don't know how to do this. Well, that's why they're there, because they have the courage to open up to new possibilities. And yes, I paint fabric, and yes, I sew it back together like a traditional quilt, because I love sewing, I love painting, and the collaboration of the materials as well as the people creates that different kind of energy. And the lack of imposition of you have to do it this way.
Yes. Interesting. On your website, you kind of explain that you do art quilts and kinetic sculpture. And there's some wonderful pictures. As a matter of fact, you've got this book called Retrospective that has the quilts in it, but also has the sculptures. Those sculptures are huge and in these vast spaces. Could you, in a non-visual medium like radio, can you tell us what you're doing there?
Yes, I'm still painting and I'm still sewing. And I think that whole notion that Haystack allows the energy, that kind of energy allows us each to explore and push ourselves, go beyond the comfort zone. And I wanted to make big things, and I have some large quilt installations in various places in the state as well as out of state, in airports and such, but I wanted to do more with painting space and just allowed the process of reinventing materials, painting on fabric, to painting on canvas, to painting on plastic, to cutting it up and then weaving it back together again and using steel armatures, hanging these things in space so that they move and fill a volume as opposed to being two-dimensional. The possibilities are endless for an artist, for somebody who's creative. And I think in looking at, addressing the setup of Haystack, you have to walk by, because of the layout, the wonderful architecture, you have to walk by other studios. To get to the fiber studio, you have to look at the graphic studio and the metal shop and the clay studio before you can get to lunch. And so there's an integration of media that allow people to connect. In fact, this past summer when I was teaching my course, I had two invaders from the metal shop. They were working with hot steel, and lo and behold, in the night, they would come down and get other people to help them to paint some fabric because they liked the idea.
I noticed that a lot of the buildings are open. You're not kind of trapped in this classroom environment. It's the fact that it's located in that beautiful place, and oftentimes you're working while looking out over the water and trees. Is this purposeful?
Yes, it's a the campus itself is a remarkable contribution to American architecture. It's one of about 40 buildings that have received an award from the American Institute of Architects called the 25-Year Award, which is given to a building or group of buildings that have had a significant impact on design in the country. So other buildings that are in that category include Rockefeller Center and the Guggenheim Museum, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the St. Louis Arch, and Haystack.
Wow.
And I would say of those buildings, and this I think speaks to a craft ethos, is that it was it's very simply constructed. It's simple framing techniques, diagonal sheathing, and then cedar shingles and on decks. Yet it's so well sited in the landscape, and that's really where it distinguishes itself. That it's Robert Campbell, the architecture critic for the Boston Globe, said it's so perfectly fitted to its site and purpose that you never afterward forget it. And it's so striking that it's another studio in a sense. It unites people in a way that they hadn't envisioned. It does what the best of architecture should do. It makes space come alive. So everything relates to, every studio relates to another studio. You're on deck, so you're always seeing people as you walk by. And yet it's very simple, too.
It's fascinating. It reminds me some years ago seeing in Spain the work of Gaudí, and that his architecture actually wraps around trees and incorporates the environment, pulls the environment into the space. That's and of course people not only are there during the day, but your session students stay there at night as
right.
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like you're on. It's almost like you're on a ship. And every studio looks out to the sea. They're all designed with ribbon windows that face the south. So it's a very conscious design decisions that were made, which have had an impact on how people relate to space and to the studio experience. I think it's not fancy, and it cost only when it was originally built between $5 and $8 a square foot. So I think if you think about Maine and practicality, that was all there, but it. Practicality doesn't mean a lack of imagination.
Interesting. Yeah. I was looking through your catalog, and I received a catalog the other day, and I know you're enrolling for your summer programs now, and I want to talk about some of those programs. But I was looking through it, and I started counting the number of different disciplines that are represented in a normal summer. And I'll read them quickly, because the breadth is fascinating. Blacksmithing, clay, drawing, painting, fiber, metals, wood, weaving, glass, quilting, printmaking, music, writing, book arts, basketry, and mixed media. Now, have I missed anything?
I think that's it. Mixed media covered a lot. So
yeah, well, that's true, too. That's a tremendous spread of activity and crafts and arts. And what you do is you bring in, I take it, faculty from all around the world that have expertise in this area. And do they work just over a session, or do they work through the summer?
Just over a session. Okay. So every 2 weeks, there'll be a whole new group that comes in, all new teachers, all new students. And then within the disciplines, the clay could be functional pottery that's high-fired or low-fired. It could be sculptural work. We have had workshops where we don't do any firing at all. So a whole range from within a discipline. So we don't have a set discipline like there's this particular kind of quilting that we would teach. We want to invite the most exciting instructors and have them teach what inspires them to teach, what they want to teach.
Elizabeth, if you were asked to introduce Haystack to a new instructor and to tell that instructor what kind of experience they were going to have as a teacher, what would you say?
Oh, if they hadn't been there
right.
before,
yeah,
hadn't
right.
seen it, it's almost impossible to explain the wonder of it. The things that will happen are beyond comprehension. Even better than dreams or ideas that you think you might have, they shift and change immediately when you get there and interact with other people and start doing the work. It's life-changing. It is absolutely life-changing.
And that's true for the instructors you find, obviously, for yourself,
yes.
as well as students.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
This idea is, you said, 51, it came about, and the founder was a woman, was it not?
Mary Beeson Bishop was the... provided the financial support at the beginning. There were about probably a group of six or seven craftspeople from Maine who wanted to start a program in the handcrafts, which they talked about printmaking and pottery were two, and some other things like furniture, and invited Mary Beeson Bishop. Her sister was one of the original founders, and Mary was a philanthropist from Flint, Michigan, and she came, and her husband had worked with General Motors, and she had been to a school in North Carolina, the Penland School, which is similar and still exists today in a collegial relationship between the two schools. And then she brought along Frances Sumner Merritt as the founding director, and Fran and was director of the Flint Institute of Arts, but had grown up in New England, and Fran came and was the school's founding director, and he, I think, along with his wife Priscilla, had a tremendous vision for what the school could be, and Fran immediately, or within a few years, took it from a local focus to having a local component, but also an international focus, and invited artists from abroad to teach and be a part of it.
I also wanted to say that when I got to Haystack the first time, it wasn't, signing up for a workshop. I wasn't able to do that, but Haystack has two programs, probably more. Stu can fill us in on that.
Yeah, I want to talk about those. Yeah.
One is a technical assistant, and the other is a work-study student. And as it's a competitive thing, and I got one of those positions as a TA and
a technical assistant yeah.
Which meant I assisted the instructor, and that was how I got to Haystack, and that was where my roots started to grow. And I was a technical assistant twice, so I was a student before I became a teacher. And I think that that's key to not only how it was open for me, but for other people that are coming up, to be a TA or a work study, do it. The opportunity is not to be missed.
Interesting way of moving into the, you mentioned the various assistants, and I noticed, Stuart, that the Quimby Family Foundation recently gave you some money, and I take it it's to help support the program in specific, or
a new program that we're launching this year. I should say the scholarship program that Elizabeth mentioned. We have about a quarter of the people who come to Haystack can receive scholarships to come. It's a competitive application, and it's free. Interesting. So if you receive a scholarship, then you can come at no cost other than getting yourself there and paying for materials. And the new program is called our Open Studio Residency, and it's supported by the Quimby Family Foundation and also an anonymous foundation for the next 3 years. It will allow us to have a two-week residency program at Haystack that will be free. We're limited to 50 people, so and people can move from studio to studio. There's not a set. There's not a teaching component. You would come to work on a project, or come to draw, come to write, come to think. It's like a mini McDowell colony, and that's going to be the first 2 weeks in June for the next 3 years.
See if I understand. If I'm a drawing, that's why I come to Haystack. And do you have me all of a sudden sitting in on the metal working studio, and
how could
I don't see how that works.
We have all our studios will be open, and there'll be technicians in each of the studios.
Okay.
But you may just want to walk in the woods and draw, or you might say, you know, I'd like to see if I could translate the drawings I'm doing to clay relief. So you could go into the clay studio, you might be able to work on that. We don't have any expectation for what people will do. It's really that we want to provide an uninterrupted time to work in our studio. So we're looking for people who have a sense of what they want to do, but also who can make use of our studio. So if you're an artist who likes to work completely alone, then that's not the place for you, since they're communal studios. And it grew out of a program that we have had since the mid-90s for people who've taught at Haystack called New Works. And it's a retreat session. It's 5 days long. And it gives them – it's a way of thanking the faculty for what they've done. And they can – work in any studio, and Elizabeth's attended a number of times, and we do it by lottery. But what we found is that one way to use the studios is to have a workshop program, but another way is to just have them be for a more open-ended artistic exploration, and that's what we're trying with this. And it's an exciting program for us because it gives us a way of involving people from other communities as well. We're inviting some people who have technology backgrounds to be here during that residency. So some people who've been involved with our initiative with MIT will be coming to that.
Yeah, that's these programs are fascinating. And that's something. What will spell success for this Open Studio residency? You must have certain expectations. What will cause you to say, boy, this really worked?
I think just seeing the studios, getting the people who want to be there and having the studios available to them. We don't have an expectation that somebody, although down the road it may happen that work that they began there will bear fruit, much as Elizabeth started to do drawings when she was teaching. I think one thing that characterizes our programs is we never have an expectation except to have no expectation. So we're not saying, you know, when you come here, your life is going to change. It may change, but I don't want to say that. I want to say, come here, be in the studios and work. Even sometimes somebody may come and say, when I go to Haystack, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And then they get there and they realize they're not going to do this, this, and this. They're going to do that. And they're going to find it wasn't what they expected to discover. It's the discovery they made when they became, when they began to investigate process more.
Do you provide these students, and this is open to both of you, do you provide these students with an opportunity or a way to evaluate what happened to them that summer in that session or what? There seems to me to be some need for people to say, okay, what came out of all of this?
Yeah, we do an evaluation like at the end of every session. We you know, give people forms to fill out and, you know, how what the experience was like, what was most memorable, how the studio worked for them. So we have an expectation, like if they take a ceramics workshop, that they're going to fire kilns, or you know, we know what we want to do within the framework of that workshop. But I think sometimes even you can take a workshop and you think you got a certain thing out of it, which you did, and then you'll remember in the back of your head that you saw somebody do something, and that stays with you, and then a year later you start to do something else. So I think it's there are a lot of seeds that are planted during a session, and lots of things happen. So for us, really what we want to do is make a place that honors the creative process and artistic integrity and community. And then that's really what we set out to make each time, and then be mindful of what evolves so that we can keep track of it and make sure that everybody can have what they need to make the work they need to make.
As an instructor, Elizabeth, do you feel that you fulfill all of that? That's a lot of stuff you're working. Let me rephrase that. I come there with a certain thing in mind. I have skills and abilities in a certain area, and I want to improve them. And I walk by the clay studio, and a spark happens. And all of a sudden, I find myself thinking of this or that. And you're the instructor working with the student. Do you help channel them through that process of discovery, or is it more a matter of simply letting them be?
I think it's definitely letting them be and learning to trust themselves. In this particular workshop this summer, I had students bring 5 photocopies of their most recent pieces and put them up on the top of a wall, their work wall, and just left them there. And then we began exploring. And through the exploration, I would talk to each of them about whatever they wanted to talk about. And there aren't any answers, you know, there are only discoveries. And everyone had those kind of discovery moments. At the end of the session, there is, for the whole of Haystack, there's what is called a walkthrough, where everybody can put up their work, and the studios are open for everyone to walk through. So all of my class could walk through the clay studio, metals, etc. And I just tell my students to put up whatever they want on their wall and to make their name very big because they've done it.
Yeah.
And the look and the response after all of the cleaning up is done and those pieces are up on the wall, it's like everyone saying, did I do that? Did I do that? And they did. They definitely did.
This is a fascinating conversation about a wonderful organization called Haystack Mountain School of Arts. And this is WERU, we're 89.9 in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor. We're about to open the telephones to those of you who want to comment or ask these interesting folks some questions. And there's 2 numbers that you can use. One is an 866 number, 866-625-9378. That actually spells WERU. It's 866-625-9378. And there is also a more local number, 469-0500. And I'll repeat that a couple of times during the next half hour, 469-0500. So the phones are open. Stuart, while we're waiting for our first call, you mentioned a collaboration with MIT. What's that all about?
Right. Well, earlier I talked about creative process, and that's central to what Haystack does. And the last 10 or 15 years, we've been interpreting that more to look at other fields where people are also involved with the creative process. We've had some invitational symposia where we look at a theme like the digital world of digits and the digital world of our hands. And as a result of a conference we had called Digital Dialogues, Technology in the Hand, we did that in collaboration with the Media Lab at MIT in 2002. And as an outgrowth of that, we became more involved with MIT. And 3 years ago, we established a Fab Lab, which is a digital fabrication studio on the campus. And it's a partnership with MIT. There are over 100 Fab Labs all around the country, all around the world. And they have a configuration of equipment like a laser cutter, a 3D printer, a CNC router. And with that equipment, you can do many wonderful things, from making satellite dishes to making stencils for screen printing and everywhere in between. And for us, it's a way of extending how we look at creative process and ingenuity. And people from MIT, doctoral students, assist in the studio during the summer. And we've also begun training with high school kids at Deer Isle Stonington High School to work with them and their teachers, so they'll be able to use the equipment as well. So it seems far away from what you'd consider to be craft. On the other hand, for us, it's still a human scale using materials and a different kind of technology.
I'm wondering, I saw an article in a magazine the other day of a process that's coming into being where you can create three-dimensional objects with a kind of a laser process.
Right. We have that, yeah. I'm actually not here. I'm a copy of myself.
Well done. <Yeah. laughs> You had me fooled.
It's that good.
Let's go back to a comment you made. Is that so many of the arts have these discussions? You know, what is art and what is not art? Is it art to have a machine create a bust of yourself?
It's just a different technology. I mean, it's all technology, whether it's a pen or a computer. It's the impulse behind the technology. So somebody's still making that, creating the object with a CAD program, or figuring it out. So I think it's really just technology is not, it's not new. We always tie technology to new, but like the microphone's a technology, the table's a, somebody yeah. figured that one out. So it's just all, to me, it's humans being ingenious and across an entire spectrum. So that's how we apply it.
You mentioned teenagers and you're involved with Stonington. Are you going to expand the opportunities for schools in the area, or is this not a...
We have a pretty extensive program for high school students. We have a program called the Student Craft Institute for kids from all around Maine. We've been doing it for almost 30 years now, and kids come from all around the state for an intensive three-day workshop. Some of those kids, it's the first time they've ever been to a place that honors creativity in that way, and they can begin to see that's what they could do with their lives. In fact, last year, Amy Stacy Curtis, who's does installation work in mills in Maine, came and had a show at our gallery in Deer Isle Village. And she had first come to Haystack when she was 17, and she thought she was going to be a scientist. And she came to Haystack, and she realized that she had to make art. And she still makes art that's influenced by science, but she's brought those two worlds together. And we have a program for kids from Deer Isle and Blue Hill called Studio-Based Learning, where they come and stay at Haystack for 3 days in the fall. And we have a student mentor program, which is going on now for kids from Deer Isle and the peninsula, where they get to work in artist studios in the winter. And then we also have community-based residencies that we do in the schools. So it's almost as many things as that we do for our international community, we do in our local community.
For those of you who... find this fascinating discussion and want to interact with these guests, the phone number is 469-0500, 469-0500. Elizabeth, what do you think of this idea of a machine creating one of your pieces?
Well, first of all, I don't think that's how the machine would be used. I don't think a machine could do that. Maybe. But I think that a machine is just another tool, and the way I've seen it functioning in the fab lab, it is just another tool. It's not particularly my tool to use, but the base structure of my hanging sculptures is the netting that you put on your bushes to keep the birds off. So I'm using it for a different purpose. And it's just another tool. And somebody else made it. And, I have to just trust that my exploration is, that I follow it.
Yeah.
Whether it's a machine in the fab lab or bird netting.
Okay. All right. It'd be interesting to see the reaction. The article that I read... kind of was pushing the ideas. This is revolutionary. Yeah, I think it changed things.
I think it could. I know the process you're talking about in terms of 3D printing, in terms of manufacturing, right. How it can change it. But I also think for us, what's important is that the technology that you use is the most appropriate. So when we have our high-tech fab lab and the connections with MIT, which I think brings us in touch with people who are using technology in the most innovative way, it's still not if you need a pair of scissors, you should use a pair of scissors. And so you don't – it's not the highest answer. It's always as high as you just need to use – your hand might be the best tool at the moment, or you might need a laser cutter. And it's having the wisdom to know when that's most appropriate and how it works. So it's not an answer that that it's always the latest thing is going to be the best thing, because there's centuries that say that, you know, this is a better thing, or there's a way that you know a material. And I think that's what we're most interested in is the sensitivity that people who work with materials bring to those materials is different than somebody who just says, oh, I can make it out of plastic, or I can make it out of steel, I can make it. Because I think with people who work with craft materials understand that the material itself has its own life and its own value, not values like it's a voter and has values, but but values in terms of what it can do and what it can't do. And understanding that voice is an important part of the process.
Fascinating. We've talked about everything except your regular sessions. Could you explain how they work and what goes on in those? They're what, 2 week sessions?
I have to think this through. Since we changed our format a little bit, we have 5 2-week sessions, 1 1-week session, then we have a 4-day conference this summer, and then plus the open studio residency. But the way the workshops work is you would just work and. But you would enroll. It's a competitive application for the workshops, and you'd say why you want to take the workshop and talk about your background. And then we have the particular studio sessions. You'd enroll for one session within a workshop. I mean, within a session, you'd take either ceramics or jewelry, whatever you'd sign up for. And then it's a you're working every day. The studio is open 24 hours a day, and it ends, as Elizabeth mentioned, with a studio walkthrough. And we also have an auction that benefits our scholarship program every session. And in the evening, the faculty will give talks about their work, and those are all free and open to the public as well.
You mentioned a session I want to hear more about. We've got a caller. Caller on the line, if you would give us your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Mary, and I'm calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I just wanted to make a comment about Haystack. I've attended twice, making the trek by car from Ann Arbor to Deer Isle.
A little bit of a trip.
It's a little bit of a trip, but I find that on the way to Haystack, the anticipation is so fabulous, and you're never disappointed. You get there, and it's such a community that gives you support and nurtures you, that you, it's an amazing, amazing place. The journey is well worth it. I took a class with Elizabeth this last summer.
Hi, Mary.
Hey, Elizabeth.
She's been sitting here jumping up and down.
And it was fabulous. And I find that every time I go, I'm a fiber artist, my technique grows just by being in that environment, looking out at the ocean, being with creative people, not having to cook food, and, you know, I love the place, and I highly encourage anyone listening to apply to Haystack.
You want to say hello, Elizabeth?
Oh, it's so nice to hear you, Mary.
Yes.
I can just picture you sitting there.
Yeah, well, every workshop that you visit at Haystack, every studio, you learn from the people, and everything you're saying is just so true about Haystack. And it's just soothing to hear both of your voices.
Well, much appreciated calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And next time you come out, I hope you have a safe drive out here. We're always glad to see you in Maine. We've got another caller, Mary, so may I go on to that call?
Thank you, yes.
Hello, caller. Your first name, please, and where you're calling from.
Hi, Hi, this is Majo. I'm calling from North Ellsworth. I'm enjoying the program, and I'm enjoying hearing Stu and Elizabeth talk about Haystack. And I just wanted to say, I've taught there on various occasions. A couple of years, summers ago, I taught a drawing workshop there. And my experience, both from the teacher's point of view and from an artist's point of view, was pretty extraordinary. I had 12 participants in the workshop that I taught, the drawing workshop. The youngest was 20 or so, and the oldest was 78. And they were all different levels. And really, after the first couple of hours, the group came together in a wonderful way. So people were not only learning on an individual basis, but learning as a group and helping each other. And through that process, I was learning as well. So it was a really, as Elizabeth's word, transformative experience for me as well. And I also just wanted to say that the staff at Haystack is just a marvelous group of people, from the people who work in the kitchen to the people who tend the grounds to the executive director and everyone in between. So I just want to thank Haystack for being there and for supporting the arts and the community.
Wonderful testimony. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, you're welcome.
Elizabeth, this opportunity to speak with one of your former students. Her work, do you remember her work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember her and the whole group.
And the second caller mentioned how cathartic it is for the instructor as well as for the students. Do you find that to be the case?
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. And the fact that the students, if we can call them students, you know, teach each other just as much as they learn. It's phenomenal. It's not like a regular classroom. It's a very welcoming place, and there are no such thing as mistakes. You know, everything is an opportunity, and a positive opportunity, even if it feels terrible at the time. You know, there's a process to go through that says, well, I had to go through that before I got to the next thing.
We're talking with Stuart Kastenbaum, the executive director of Haystack, and we just heard from Elizabeth Bush, who's an artist, an instructor, and obviously received something extraordinary from that experience with Haystack. And if you'd like to talk to these interesting folks about this interesting organization, 469-0500, 469-0500. Stuart, you mentioned a few moments ago that you have an event. I can't think of the word. A presentation of some type about a subject matter or something during
the conference.
Conference.
Yes, yes.
That's the word I was struggling for. Yeah.
So every summer we will have a conference that looks at craft in a kind of a broader perspective. We've had ones that looked at language and craft and technology and craft. And this year we're looking at interdisciplinary work and collaboration, since there seems to be so much of that both in the arts and in other disciplines as well. So we have a format where we have lectures by people looking at that issue, but also studio activities that examine that issue by actually making things in the studio. And we have a lineup of people who represent both craft disciplines and other disciplines outside of those studios as well. And I should mention that all the catalog is and all that information is on our website, in addition to images of the school and lots of other information about our programs.
This idea of interdisciplinary work orientation would seem to be the hallmark for Haystack. I mean, isn't that what Haystack is all about, is mixing together the interests?
Yes. Yeah.
So this convocation, or whatever you want to call it, is just pointing that out, or is it trying to draw it further? Or
I think looking at while that interdisciplinary action happens within the studios, this is also looking at people who've used it within other disciplines, scientific disciplines, and actually addressing the particular topic in a way. I think we manifest it when we do it all the time, but this really looks at that. We have a number of presenters. I could.
Oh yes, go ahead.
I just have to take a quick look to remind myself.
The catalog that you're looking at is available through your website.
Yes, you can contact the school to get the catalog mailed to you, or you can go to the website and that has everything on it.
It's an extensive catalog. It really gives all of the profiles of instructors and courses and so on.
But some of the people who'll be there this summer, Allison Chase from who has her own dance company and lives in Brooksville and was one of the founders of Palabolas. We'll be talking about the interdisciplinary work that she does. Eric Demain, who's a MacArthur Award-winning scientist who has begun to investigate origami paper folding as ways of understanding molecular structures, will be there working in glass to do folding in glass. And then Matthew Crawford, who is a has a PhD in linguistics, but finds greater joy in having a motorcycle repair shop. He wrote a book called "The Shop Class as Soulcraft," and he'll be one of the presenters. So that gives you a sense of the range of the people.
You have mentioned several times now talk about interdisciplinary arts and science. Is this somewhere you're trying to go with this? Is this a reflection of something that's beginning to happen in the arts in general? Or now you're working, you're bringing MIT in and so on. Is this just another tool?
Yeah, I think there's such an importance of having people understand what it's like to work with materials and investigate those materials, and that the idea of craft and how you work with materials has such an implications for how people learn, for how we deal with the resources of our planet. So I think that we can have people who go to MIT or teach at MIT understand our importance is a kind of a radical shift in a way, and that we are all understand that we're working with creativity and ingenuity with whatever fields we're in, to me is a kind of a humanizing effort that's at the heart of the school.
We have another caller, and caller, I'm going to ask you to be somewhat brief because we're coming to the end of the show, but if you could give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Daniel. I'm calling from Bangor.
Go ahead.
I teach in at Hessen University, and I'm dean there of College of Health and Education, and we have a movement where we're trying to get going in interprofessional education for students. And I thought, I just loved your program. I've been listening to all of it and think it would fit really nice into introducing our faculty and students to a lot of your principles you're trying to get across there of the creative process. And I just wondered if you had some ideas or suggestions what we could do. We have a couple of properties that people have offered to donate to us that we'd like to maybe accept, but they're up in the mountains and way away, and we're not sure what to do, so we'd love some advice.
In 25 words or less.
Well, I always used to say municipal sewer and water would be the first thing that I'd say. You don't have to deal with any issues like that, but it sounds like you're going to be pretty far away from things. I think I don't know. That's a big question, but I think you wanted have the evolution of the program really drive what's going to happen with any kind of facility. Mm-hmm. And to us, I think we've always, although I think we have a pretty big vision of what we can be, it's always been a pretty modest approach to how we do it. So we're not trying to serve 1,000 people at a time. We're serving 85 people. So scale, I think is a big issue. And, but there's a wonderful thing about Maine and what can happen when you get people just a little bit away from their everyday world and they can investigate things. So the idea of a retreat setting, you know, is great. So I think that's got great possibilities. You also could investigate on a pilot basis places that already have, like Camp Kiev has a retreat setting. Haystack sometimes will also collaborate with other places to do retreats. And you might want to investigate that and just to kind of see what works before you go off and, you know, establish a program.
And Daniel, you might also want to just go on to the website for Haystack and maybe connect with them that way too.
Right. Yeah, I was definitely going to do that. And I think that's good advice. Could you give me the name of the other place you mentioned?
Oh, it's Camp Kiev. I think it's in Damariskata around there.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah. I know that they just do retreats.
Mm-hmm.
If you call me at 1 o'clock, if you call at Haystack, I could talk with you more about it.
All right. That sounds great. And what's your name again?
Stuart Kestenbaum.
Okay.
He's the executive director. Thank you very much, Daniel. I have to let you go here because we're going to have to sign off fairly soon.
Sure.
But thanks
for
calling.
Thank you so much for the program.
Thank you. Before we end here, I just want to mention that the Maine Association of Nonprofits is having a Nonprofit Week. And it's a wonderful organization, and they're going to be up in the state offices promoting the nonprofit sector. And since so much of the arts organizations that exist in the state are under the nonprofit, which basically means that investors cannot get profit, it does not mean that a nonprofit can't earn money. And these organizations are all struggling in enormous odds sometimes. And your support of them and the Maine Association of Nonprofits, it's a wonderful organization. I just wanted to mention that they're working up in the state offices this week for Nonprofit Week. This has been one of the most delightful conversations, I think, because of the spirit that you each bring to this conversation. And Elizabeth, I'm curious as we come to an end here, is there any last bit of advice or thought that you want to pass on to our audience?
Yes. If you think you're not qualified to go to Haystack, do it. Just do it.
Stuart, any last thought?
No, I think just thank you, Michael, for doing the program. We really appreciate it. And if people have questions about anything about Haystack, go on the website or just give us a call. We're one of the few organizations that answer the phone and don't have a voicemail system you get lost in.
Well, thank you for being with us. It's Stuart Kestenbaum, the executive director of Haystack, and Elizabeth Bush, artist and instructor at Haystack. My name is Michael Donahue, your host, and thank you for tuning in. Take care.